You know, he said, if you want to remedy that, you can. I looked up at him. Remedy what? The whole not going to the prom thing, he said. Eli's at the shop right now, doing inventory. What, I said, are you talking about? You just walk over there and into the office and say, hey, be my prom date, he said. It's that simple. I wanted to tell him that nothing concerning me and Eli was simple, especially lately. Instead, I said, what makes you think I want to go with him? Because, he said, you're sitting here going on about spending high school alone, never going to prom at all. It was kind of obvious who you were talking about. Maggie. I was talking about Maggie. He crossed his arms over his chest.
Sure you were.
I just looked at him for a second. Then I said, well, what about you?
Me?
I nodded. When are you planning to ask her?
Ask her what?
I rolled my eyes.
Oh, no, we're just friends.
Right. I opened up the box again and started flipping through the pictures, taking out the one of her on the bike and walking and laughing and in front of the mirror, laying them on the desk side by side. Because, of course, you took this many pictures of all your friends. He glanced at the shots, then swallowed.
Actually, he said stiffly, I do have a lot of shots of Wallace.
Adam, come on. I watched as, defeated, he slumped into the chair, folding his arms behind his head. For a moment, we just sat there, neither of us saying anything. Outside, I could hear Maggie chattering on the pros and cons of one-piece bathing suits. The thing is, he said finally, I've made it this far, you know. We start college in a matter of weeks. So? So, he continued, I just don't know if I want that tinge on the summer, not to mention our friendship. An awkward tinge that will then color everything else.
You're assuming she'll say no.
No, he said. I'm assuming she'll say yes because she'll figure it'll be fun, and then I'll work it up to be this big deal like it's a real date, which is not how she'll see it, which will become crushingly obvious at the prom itself when she abandons me to dance and then leave and eventually marry some other guy. Outside, Maggie laughed, the sound light and cheery, like music. Well, I said, at least you haven't put much thought into it. He gave me a wry smile.
Just like you haven't thought about asking Eli, right?
I haven't. He rolled his eyes. No. Really. We had a falling out. We're not even talking right now.
Well, then, you know what you need to do.
I said, I do?
Yep.
He pushed himself to his feet.
Get back on that bike.
I just looked at him. It's not that simple.
Sure it is, he said. Just takes one more time. Remember?
I considered this as he started for the door, sliding his hands in his pockets. On the same note, I said, there's a worse thing than an awkward tinge.
Yeah?
I nodded.
What's that?
Always wondering if it might have gone the other way. I nodded at the prom shots still laid out in front of me. That is a lot of pictures, you know. He glanced at them, then back at me.
Yeah, he said. I guess it is. My phone beeped then, and I glanced down at it. Jason.
Are you free for lunch? I'm en route to the Last Chance. Have an hour.
Gotta go, Adam said. Then he pointed at the scab on my knee.
Remember, back on the bike.
Right, I replied.
Got it.
He flashed me a thumbs up, then was gone, whistling. Always so damn cheery. How was that? As he headed back toward the front of the store, I looked down at Maggie's pictures, end to end, and then at my phone, where Jason's text was still on the screen. I knew I'd really screwed up with Eli, turning away from him the way I had, but perhaps it wasn't too late to have a tinge of my own. Maybe good, maybe bad, but at least it would add some color, somewhere. So I picked up my phone and gave Jason his answer. Okay, on my way. When I got home that evening, Heidi was on the back deck, looking out at the water. Even from a distance and through the sliding glass door, I recognized the tenseness in her shoulders, the way her head leaned a little sadly to the side, and so wasn't surprised when she turned, hearing me, to see her eyes were red and puffy.
Auden, she said, reaching to brush back her hair, taking a breath. I didn't think you'd be home until later.
I finished up early. I slid my keys into my bag.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. She came inside, shutting the door behind her. Just doing some thinking.
We stood there for a moment, neither of us saying anything. Upstairs I could hear Thisbe's waves crashing.
So, how did it go?
Good, she swallowed, biting her lip. We did a lot of talking.
And,
she said, we agreed that for the time being it's better if we keep things as they are.
With him at the Condor, I said, clarifying. She nodded.
So, he didn't want to come back?
She walked over to me, putting her hands on my shoulders.
Your father, he thinks he'd be a hindrance more than a help right now. That maybe until the beach bash and summer is over, it's better if I just focus on me and Thisbe.
How could that be better? I asked. You're his family. She bit her lip again, then looked down at her hands.
I know it doesn't sound like it makes sense.
It doesn't.
But I understand what he's saying, she continued. Your father and I, we had a whirlwind courtship and marriage, and I got pregnant so fast. We just need to slow down a bit.
I put my purse down on the table. So, this is a slowing, not a full stop. Heidi nodded.
Absolutely.
To be honest, I wasn't fully convinced. I knew my dad and how he operated. If things got complicated, he extricated himself, somehow managing to make it seem like it was the most selfless of gestures, instead of just the opposite. He wasn't abandoning Heidi and Thisbe. He was simplifying their lives. He hadn't left my mom over professional envy. He'd stepped aside to give her the spotlight she needed. And he certainly hadn't basically ignored the fact that I was his child all those years. He was just teaching me to be independent and a grown-up in a world in which most people were too infantile. My dad never got back on the bike. He never even let himself crash. One wobble, or even the hint of one, and he pulled over to the side, abandoning the ride altogether. So, Heidi said, pulling out a chair and sitting down at the table. Enough about me. What's going on with you? I slid in opposite her, folding my hands on top of my bag. Well, I said, it looks like I have a date to the prom.
Really? She clapped her hands. That's great!
Yeah. Jason just asked me. She blinked.
Jason?
My friend from home, I said. She still looked quizzical, so I picked up my phone, flashing it at her. The texter?
Oh, the one who stood you up.
I nodded.
Well, that's very...
lame, I said.
I was going to say full circle, actually, or something to that effect, she said slowly.
What?
You don't want to go?
No, I do. I looked down at my hands again. I mean, it's a second chance. I think I'd be stupid not to take it.
True.
She sat back, running a hand through her hair.
They don't come around that often.
I nodded, thinking of Jason at the last chance. How he'd been waiting for me in a booth and smiled broadly when I came in the door. Over burgers and onion rings, he'd gone on and on about the leadership conference and how great it was going, and listening to him felt so familiar, but not in a bad way. It was like reversing. Going back to the spring when we'd shared lunches and talked about school and classes. And when he cleared his throat and said he had something to ask me, that was familiar too, and I'd agreed easily. It was just that simple. Now I looked at Heidi, who was staring out the window over the sink, and remembered how I'd once seen her based on her effervescent emails and girly clothes, all flash, no substance. I thought I knew so much when I'd arrived here. The smartest girl in the room. But I'd been wrong.
Hey, I said, can I ask you something?
She looked over at me.
Of course.
A few weeks back, I began, you said something about how my mom wasn't a truly cold bitch. How she couldn't be. Because they always end up alone. Do you remember that?
Heidi furrowed her brow, thinking.
Vaguely.
And then you said you knew all about cold bitches because you used to be one yourself.
Right, she said. So what's your question?
I guess I stopped, taking a breath. Were you really, though?
A cold bitch? She asked.
I nodded.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I just can't picture that, I said. I mean, you that way.
Heidi smiled. Well, you didn't know me before I came here and met your father. I was just out of business school, totally uptight. Ruthless, actually. I was killing myself gaining capital so I could open a boutique in New York. I had a business plan, and all these investor contacts, a loan, the whole deal. Nothing else mattered.
I never knew you lived in New York.
It was my plan after I graduated, she said. But then my mom got sick, and I had to come home here to Colby for the summer to take care of her. I'd known Isabel and Morgan since high school, so I got a job with them waiting tables, just to make some extra cash for my move.
You worked at the Last Chance?
That's how I met your dad, she said. He just had his faculty interview at Weimar and came in for lunch. It was slow, so we started talking, and it just went from there.
At the end of the summer, my mom got better for a little while, so I said goodbye to your dad and left. But once I was in New York, it just didn't feel right. I didn't have the hunger for it anymore.
Really?
She drew in a breath. I'd come here planning to leave as soon as I could. It was a pit stop, not a destination. I had my whole life mapped out.
So, what happened?
I guess that map didn't turn out to be mine after all, she said. So, I left New York, married your dad, and used my money to open Clementine's. And weird as it sounds, it felt perfectly right. Totally different, but perfectly right. I thought of her face when I'd come home that night. The sad way she'd told me about her talk with my dad.
Does it still feel right, I mean?
She looked at me for a moment. Then she said, Actually, yes. Of course I wish things were different with your dad and me right now. But I have Thisbe. And my work. I have what I wanted, even if it isn't perfect. If I'd stayed in New York, I would have always wondered if that was possible.
No tinge, I said.
What?
I shook my head. Nothing.
Heidi pushed her chair out, getting to her feet. In the end, I went away for the summer, fell in love, and everything changed. It's the oldest story in the world. The way she was looking at me as she said this made me suddenly uncomfortable, and I turned my attention back to my purse in my lap. Yeah, I replied, pulling my phone out. I guess I have heard that before. In response, she said nothing. Instead, just running a hand over the top of my head as she passed by me.
Good night, Auden, she said, stifling a yawn. Sleep well.
You too. And the thing was, I knew I would. Sleep, that is, and maybe even well. That was one thing that had definitely changed for me in my time here. The love part and everything else, that didn't apply. But you never knew. I had a prom date. With it, another chance to draw my own map. The summer wasn't over yet, so maybe the story wasn't either.
Okay, Leah said, hiking up her dress to examine the hem. I'm having major flashbacks right now. Didn't we just do this?
We did, Esther told her, in May.
And why are we doing it again?
Because it's the beach bash, Maggie said.
That's a statement, not an explanation, Leah replied, and it's definitely not reason enough to go through all this again.
We were in Heidi's bedroom, where she'd sent us after hearing us complain en masse about not being able to find anything decent to wear to the beach bash prom. My stepmother continued to surprise me. Not only was she a former cold bitch, but a shopaholic as well. She had tons of dresses in a variety of sizes that she'd bought over the years. Vintage, classic, entirely 80s, you name it and it was there.
We need dates too, remember, Leah said. Unless Heidi's got some hot guys tucked away behind those shoeboxes.
You never know, I said, peering into the deep recesses of the closet. At this point I wouldn't be surprised.
Dates aren't mandatory this time, Maggie said. Let's just all go together. It'll be easier not having to deal with boys anyway.
Leah shot her a look.
No way. If I'm having to get all dolled up and wear a nice dress, I want a cute boy to go with it. It's a deal breaker.
Well, I said, opening up the other side closet door, tonight is ladies' night at Tally Ho.
Finally, Leah pointed at me, someone understands. Easy for her to say, Esther said. She's the only one with a date.
But not a dress, I replied, pulling out a black, low-cut sheath, then immediately putting it back. It was a small detail, I knew, and it wasn't like this was a real prom, but it would probably be the only one I'd ever attend, so I was determined to make the most of it. So far, though, everything I'd found had been too something. Too bright, too short, too long, too much.
Oh, man, Esther spun around,
holding against herself a pink 50s-style dress with a full, stiff crinoline.
How much will you bet me to wear this without any sense of irony?
You have to, Maggie said, reaching out to touch the skirt. God, it's perfect for you.
Only if you wear that black one you had on earlier, the Audrey Hepburn-looking one, Esther told her.
You think? It's so dressy.
So wear flip-flops with it. They are your trademark.
Maggie walked over, picking up the black dress from the bed.
That could work. What do you think, Leah?
I think, Leah, who was pulling a bright red number over her tank top, said, that if I'm going to go to this thing, dateless, I could wear a garbage bag and it wouldn't matter.
Why do you need a guy to dress up? Maggie asked. Aren't we your oldest and dearest friends good enough company?
Maggie, Leah yanked the dress down farther. It's a prom, not a sisterhood retreat.
And this may be the last big thing we all do together before college. It's almost August. The summer is practically over.
Don't, Esther threatened, pointing at her. Remember the rules. No waxing nostalgic until the 20th. We agreed.
I know, Maggie said, fluttering her hands in front of her face.
She walked over to the bed, sitting down with the black dress across her lap.
I can't believe that it's all really going to be over soon. This time next year, everything will be different.
God, I hope so.
Leah!
Leah looked over from the mirror, where she was eyeing her reflection.
What? So I'm hoping a year from now I'll have a great boyfriend and total life satisfaction? A girl can dream, can't she?
This isn't so bad, though, Maggie said. What we have and had, it's not.
No, I said, pushing aside another couple of dresses. It isn't.
I just sort of said this, not really thinking. It wasn't until the room got quiet that I realized they were all looking at me.
See? Maggie said, nodding at me. Auden understands.
She understood about Tally-ho, too, Leah grumbled. Not that anyone else cared about that.
Seriously, though, Maggie looked at me. She didn't get to do all this back then. If you need a reason to go to the prom and dress up and do it all over again, do it for Auden. She missed it the first time around.
Leah glanced at me, then back at her reflection. I don't know, she said. It's a lot to ask.
So what? Esther said, bouncing up and down, her crinoline rustling. It gives you an excuse to go to Tally-ho.
True, Leah agreed.
You don't have to, you know, I said to Maggie, who was watching me as I pulled on another dress. I've got Jason to go with. I'll be fine.
No way, she replied. For the true prom experience, you need your friends there.
Because who else but your friends, Esther said, would agree to help you recreate your past just to fix some wrong that's been niggling you ever since.
Nobody, Leah said.
Nobody, Maggie repeated.
They were all looking at me.
Nobody, I said, although I could think of one other answer besides this one, even if I couldn't say it out loud.
Even with my affirmation, though, they continued to stare at me, to the point that I started to wonder if I had ink on my face or my underwear was showing. I was just about to do a panicked mirror check when Maggie said, "Wow, Auden, that's the one."
"The what?" I said.
"Your dress," Esther said, nodding at me. "It looks amazing." I looked down at the purple dress I'd pulled on moments earlier, which I hadn't even really looked at that closely, yanking it from the closet only because it wasn't red or black or white like everything else I'd tried on. Now, though, as I stepped in front of the mirror, I saw that it did fit me pretty well. The neckline was flattering, the skirt full, and I liked how it brought out my eyes. It wasn't a dress to stop traffic, but maybe I didn't need that anyway.
"Really?" I said.
"Definitely." Maggie came over to stand beside me, reaching out a hand to touch the skirt. "Don't you like it?" I studied my reflection. I'd never been one for dresses or bold colors, and had never owned anything that shade of purple before in my life. I looked like a different girl. But maybe that was the point. And like having the right snacks for a true adventure, the proper attire is everything.
"Yeah," I said, reaching down with my fingers to pull the skirt to one side. When I dropped it, it swished back, rearranging itself as if it already knew where it belonged. "It's perfect."
Chapter 17. The morning of the beach bash, I woke at 8 a.m. to the sound of Isby crying through our shared wall. I rolled over, burying my head in the pillow, and waited for Heidi to come and quiet her down. A few minutes later, the crying turned to sobbing, and I began to wonder what was going on. When she started to all-out scream, I went to investigate. I found her on her back in her crib, red-faced, hair matted down with sweat. When she saw me lean over her, she yelled louder, waving her arms madly in front of her face. When I picked her up, cradling her against me, she quieted down, emitting only a bunch of little gasps, like hiccups.
"You're okay," I told her,
jiggling her slightly as I stuck my head out in the hallway. No sign yet of Heidi, which was sort of worrisome, so I went back in and changed the baby's diaper, which cheered her up considerably. Then I swaddled her up and headed downstairs, where I came upon Heidi sitting at the kitchen table, boxes of prom favors stacked all around her, the phone to her ear.
"Yes, Robert, I understand your predicament," she was saying as she fiddled with a coffee mug in front of her. "But the truth is I was counting on you, and I don't know if I can find someone else on such short notice."
I could hear my dad's voice, distant, replying to this through the receiver. It made me realize how long it had been since I'd spoken to him. A week, maybe even two. He'd finally got the message of my not replying to his messages, though. My voicemail had been empty for a while now.
"You know what?" she said suddenly. "It's fine. I'll just find someone. No, don't worry about it. Really. But I need to go now. I have a ton of stuff to do today, and..."
She stopped talking, and I heard my dad's voice again. Whatever he was saying, it elicited nothing from Heidi but a sigh and a shake of her head. I hesitated, wondering if I should just go back upstairs. But then Isby let out a squawk, and Heidi turned, spotting us. "I have to go," she said, then hung up without a goodbye. She pushed out her chair.
"Oh, Auden, I'm so sorry she woke you up. I thought I heard her, but I was on the phone and..."
"It's fine," I said as she reached for the baby, smiling at her as she lifted her from my arms. "I was kind of up anyway."
"You and me both."
She tucked Isby over her shoulder,
patting her back as she walked to the coffee maker, pouring herself a fresh cup, then one for me. As she handed it over, she said, I jolted awake at 4, thinking about everything I had to do in the next 15 hours. And of course, then when I was feeling just a little bit on top of things, your father called to say he can't watch the baby tonight after all because he's got to jet off to New York to meet with his agent first thing Monday morning about his book. I considered this as she sat down at the table again, arranging Thisbe in her lap. Well, I said, I can stay with her if you want. You? She shook her head. Of course not. You're going to the beach bash. I don't have to. Yes, you do. You have a date and everything. I shrugged, looking down at my coffee. What's wrong? I thought you were excited. I wasn't sure exactly how to explain the hesitation that had come over me ever since I'd found my dress. It was just this weird, sad feeling, like the prom had already fallen short before it even happened. I don't know, I said. I guess it's just that it's not the real prom, you know? I mean, it'll be fun and everything, but it won't be the same as if I'd gone the first time around, to the real one. Heidi considered this, still patting Isby's back. Well, I guess you could look at it that way, she said. Or you could realize you're lucky to have another try, and that it's up to you to make it memorable. Yeah, I said. I guess. Look, she said, putting down her cup. The basic fact of the matter is that no, this isn't ideal. Very few things are. Sometimes you have to manufacture your own history. Give fate a push, so to speak. You know? Right away, I thought of me and Eli, working our way down my quest. Each of those things, bowling, food fights, tossing newspapers, had happened late and out of order. Not exactly as they probably should have. But the memories and experiences were no less real because of it. If anything, they were more special because they hadn't happened to me, but because of me. And him. You know what? I said to Heidi. You're absolutely right. Am I? She smiled. Well, that's a nice thing to hear, especially considering the day I still have ahead of me. It'll be fine, I told her, drinking down the rest of my coffee and going for a refill. On the way, I picked up her cup, taking it with me. I'm up and ready to help. What can I do? She groaned, pulling a yellow legal pad out of one of the favor boxes and flipping up a page. Well, there are favors to bring to the hall, and the punch bowl to pick up, and the DJ to meet at 10 a.m. for a sound check. Oh, and the balloon people are demanding payment before they'll do anything, and now I have to find a babysitter. I slid her now full mug in front of her, then took my seat again. In her arms, Isby looked at me, and I reached out, running a hand over her head. Her skin was warm and soft, and she kept her eyes on me for a moment before tucking in tighter to her mother's chest and closing them, drifting off even in the midst of everything. By noon, I'd dealt with the balloon people, made 2 trips to the hall where the prom was happening, and pulled a muscle in my shoulder, helping Heidi move the photo backdrop, a large wooden fake wave dotted with fish made by the local senior arts group, into place. I was sticky and sore and on my way back to the house to pick up a box of punch glasses when I saw Jason. He was getting out of his car, which was parked right by the top of the boardwalk. When he turned and saw me, he stiffened, then lifted a hand to wave. Auden, he called out, hurrying closer. I've been trying to call you. I had a flash of my phone, which I was pretty sure I'd left on the kitchen table. Oh, I said, I've been running around all morning. Your stepmother said, he replied. I finally looked up your dad's home number. Luckily, there are only a couple of Wests here.
Behind him, I could see Adam coming out of the bike shop, wheeling a red bike with a sign that said, "Ready to go," hanging from its handlebars. He parked it by the bench, then went back inside, the door banging behind him.
"So, look," Jason said, "I need to talk to you about tonight."
"Okay."
"I'm not..." He stopped, then took a breath. "I'm not going to be able to make it."
I was surprised by the way I reacted, hearing this. My face flushed, my heartbeat jumped. It was like every time I got on the bike, a mix of fear and inevitability all at once.
"You're canceling on me?" I said.
"Seriously? Again?"
"I know," he winced. "It's totally rude of me. I wouldn't blame you if you never spoke to me again."
This was when I was supposed to proclaim otherwise. I didn't. I just waited for the excuse, because there always was one.
"It's just there's this speaker coming today to the conference," he said quickly. "She's a leader in student activism. Has really made some big changes at Harvard, where she went to undergrad, and now Yale, where she's in law school. I mean, incredible policy-changing stuff, so she's a great contact for me."
I said nothing as Adam came out once again, this time pushing a smaller green bike. It had fatter tires, a glossy black seat, and was polished so clean it was glinting in the sun.
"Enjoy your ride," said its sign, which was swinging in the breeze.
"Anyway," Jason continued, "her talk is this afternoon, but then she's going to dinner with a select few attendees to talk about some of her experiences one-on-one. No first years were supposed to be invited, but apparently she'd heard about that recycling initiative I did junior year, so..." I was listening, even as I watched Adam push out another bike, this one a two-seater.
"You'll look sweet," said its sign, with a heart around it.
"It's just," Jason finished finally. "It's something I have to do. I'm sorry." Right then, I realized something. I wasn't upset that Jason was ditching me. That racing of my heart, the flushing of my face I was feeling, it was what happened when you got hurt, true, but also when you got back up and went on. Maybe Jason had never been meant to be part of my second chance anyway. And this was just the push that I, and fate, needed.
"You know what?" I said to him. "It's fine."
He blinked at me.
"Really?"
"Really." I took a breath, making sure this was true. Weirdly, it was. "I'm okay with this."
"You are?"
I nodded.
"Oh, God, Auden, thanks for understanding. I figured you'd be so angry with me. But you, of all people, understand the academic thing, right? I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and..."
He was still talking as I stepped around him and started toward the bike shop. Vaguely, I heard him saying something about understanding and obligation, commitment and future endeavors, all the buzzwords and concepts I did understand and knew so well. Unlike what I was now approaching. Still, more than ever this summer, I'd learned that it's not just where you go, but how you choose to get there. So, I pulled that sign off the green bike, "Enjoy your ride," and went inside to take the first step toward doing just that.
"Guess what?" Maggie said as soon as I walked into Clementine's.
"What?" She clapped her hands.
"I have a date for the prom!"
"Guess what?" I replied.
"What?"
"I don't,"
Her mouth dropped open. Oh, and I added, I bought a bike.
What?
She said, but I was already walking past her. I heard her fall in behind me, yelling to some customers by the jeans that she'd be with them in a second. And when I pushed open the door to the office, she was right on my heels.
Okay, let's just slow down.
She held up her hands, palms facing me. First things first, what do you mean you don't have a date?
Just that, I said, sitting down at the desk. Jason bailed on me.
Again?
I nodded.
When?
About 20 minutes ago.
Oh my God.
She put a hand over her mouth. Her expression was so horrified, like someone had died.
That's the worst thing ever.
No, I said, swallowing. It's actually not.
No?
I shook my head. The worst thing is that right afterward, I marched right into the bike shop to ask Eli to go with me, and he said no. She threw up her other hand, clapping it over the one already covering her mouth.
Holy crap,
she said, her voice muffled.
Where does the bike come in?
I don't know, I said, waving my hand. That part's kind of a blur. Her eyes widened, and she dropped her hands, sticking her head back out in the hallway. After checking on the customers, she whipped out her phone.
Don't move, she said, fingers flying over the keyboard. I'm calling for backup.
Maggie, I groaned, please don't.
Too late.
She pushed one last button.
It's done.
Which was how, 20 minutes later, I found myself sitting in the same spot, now surrounded by not only Maggie, but also Leah and Esther, with a large cup of coffee and two packs of chocolate cupcakes on the desk in front of me.
Cupcakes?
Maggie said to Esther.
Really?
I panicked, Esther replied. What kind of snack does a situation like this call for? Leah thought for a moment. The pharmaceutical kind. Well, they don't have that at the gas grow, so cupcakes it is. Esther looked at me. Okay, we're all here now.
What happened?
I picked up the coffee, taking a sip, and immediately wanted to drain the whole thing. Instead, I told them. It wasn't like I had a solid plan when I pulled open the bike shop door. All I could think was that here I had another chance, and this time I was going to do it right. It seemed like the best sign possible, maybe even ideal, that I spotted Eli the minute I stepped inside the door. He was behind the counter, his back to me, stuffing something into a duffel bag, and seeing him, I had the same reaction I'd had for weeks now, a sudden embarrassment about how I'd acted, followed by an urge to run in the other direction as fast as I could. Instead, I gripped the sign in my hand even tighter and pressed on.
Hey,
I said as I came up on the counter. My voice sounded loud and ragged, rushed, and I told myself to take a breath, which got considerably more difficult as he turned around to face me. Hey. He was looking at me with a wary expression. What's up? In a perfect world, I would have eased into what I had to say gradually, worked up to it, phrasing it neatly and succinctly, with all the right adjectives. As it was, I just blurted out, "Do you remember that first time we went bowling?" Eli raised his eyebrows. Then he looked in the repair room behind him, where, distantly, I could see Adam and Wallace standing in the door that led out to the back alley, their backs to us.
"Yeah,"
he said after a moment.
"Why?"
I swallowed, the sound seeming incredibly loud in my own ears. I was all annoyed because I wasn't good at it, and you said I shouldn't have expected to be because I'd never done it before, and what mattered was that I keep trying.
Right, he said slowly. I remember.
I knew I was on the verge of losing my nerve. I could literally feel it slipping away, second by second, like a wave slowly pulling itself back out to sea. But I kept going anyway.
That's what happened with us, I said. With me. What we were doing, what we had. It was my first time. You know, where it mattered. And I wasn't good at it. I sucked, actually.
He narrowed his eyes. Oh, Jesus, I thought, that didn't come out right.
At being with you, I added quickly, I was bad at, you know, us. It was all new to me. I screwed it up because I didn't know what I was doing, and that scared me, so I didn't even want to try. It's like the bike, which you were also right about, by the way.
It was very, very quiet in the shop all around us, which made all of this sound that much more loud. In fact, I probably would have been completely humiliated if I'd let my words catch up with me. All the more reason to keep going.
What I'm saying, I said, because God knew I needed some clarification, is that I'm sorry. You can call it crazy or call it chicken salad or whatever, but I want to do what you said, keep trying. So I'm doing that by coming here and asking you to go to the prom with me tonight.
Yo, Eli!
I heard Wallace yell, suddenly from behind him.
Train's leaving. Time to go.
Eli didn't respond, though. He was still looking at me, his face serious. As I stared back at him, I tried to remember all those hours we'd spent together and how they'd begun and ended in pretty much this very same space. Because of this, it seemed more right than ever to be there now, when I'd know for sure whether we'd continue or end for good. I knew, too, that these were the two possibilities. But for some reason, I figured he'd pick the other one.
I'm sorry, he said.
And the thing was, it seemed true, as he picked up his bag, slinging it over one shoulder. But I can't. I felt myself nod stupidly. And then, with one last look, intense and almost sad, he was gone, turning his back and walking through the office, past Adam and Wallace, and out of sight. A second later, the door banged shut behind him. Done.
Auden?
I turned my head, still stunned, to see Adam coming toward me.
Are you looking for Eli? Because he just...
No, I said too quickly. I'm not.
Oh.
Okay. He glanced at Wallace, who shrugged.
Well, is there something else you needed?
I was really just looking for a way to save face, to get out of there gracefully. But then I looked down again at the sign still in my hand. Enjoy your ride. And it seemed suddenly to be just that. A sign. Actually, I said, there is one thing.
Call it chicken salad?
Esther laughed, clapping her hands.
That is so retro. I haven't heard that since grade school.
I, Leah said, never understood what that meant.
So... That's how you ended up with the bike, Maggie said.
Bike? Leah said. What does a bike have to do with any of this?
I just bought one, I told her. Apparently. Because she also just learned how to ride one, Maggie explained. I've been teaching her every morning on the sly. She never knew before.
Really? Esther looked at me. Wow, that's impressive.
That I didn't know or I learned? I asked.
Esther considered this.
Both, she said finally.
People, let's stay focused. Leah turned to me. Okay, so Eli shot you down. It's not the end of the world.
No, I said. It's just incredibly humiliating, and now I can never face him again.
I wonder why he said no, Maggie mused.
Because he's Eli, I told her.
Leah rolled her eyes. That's a statement, not an explanation.
What I mean is, I said, I know what he's like. I had my chance with him and I blew it, so he's done.
Wait. Esther held up her hand. Back up. When were you and Eli an item?
Once again, I had everyone's attention as I said, we were hanging out a lot a few weeks back.
Doing what? Leah asked.
I thought of Eli and me, in the car, driving through the dark streets of Colby, alone and together, all those nights. Shopping, eating, talking, questing. We'd done so much it seemed impossible to narrow it down to any one word, so instead I decided to go with the one thing we hadn't done. At least until the very end.
We couldn't sleep, I said, so we were just up together.
Until you blew it, Esther said, clarifying.
I nodded.
What did you do?
I looked down at my cold coffee.
I don't know, I said. Something happened and I got scared and pulled away.
Okay, well, that's not vague, Leah said.
Leah, Esther said.
What? Something happened? What does that mean?
They all looked at me again, and under their gazes I realized that this too was a point where I usually pulled back. Folded into myself, hiding away. But considering what I'd already been through that day, it seemed only fitting to go for broke.
My dad and Heidi's separating, I said. It kicked up a lot of stuff for me, and I dealt with it the way I did when my parents split up.
Which was? Esther asked.
I shrugged. Throwing myself into books and school, basically blocking everyone out, especially anyone who might call me on it.
Like Eli, Maggie said.
Especially Eli, I replied.
We'd had this one night where we really connected. And the next day, I just shut down on him. It was so stupid of me.
Did you tell him that, though? Maggie asked. Today?
Yep, I said. But like I said, it was too late. He's done. There was a moment of quiet as this was processed and considered. I picked up the pack of cupcakes, then put them back down.
Well, Leah said finally. I say screw it.
Leah, Esther sighed. Honestly.
No, really. So you're humiliated. It happens. And who needs boys, anyway? We'll all just go to the prom together tonight and have a good time.
I thought, Esther said to her, that you were determined to have a date or you weren't going.
That was before I'd exhausted all my options, Leah explained. Now I'm embracing my single status and just hanging with the girls.
Like we all are, right? Right, Esther said. They both looked at me. I said, you know, having been rejected twice, I'm thinking I might just stay home.
What? Leah shook her head. That's a total quitter attitude.
Twice, I said again, holding up two fingers. In 15 minutes, within 100 feet of each other. What's next? An anvil on my head?
This, Esther said to me, is exactly when you need to go out with the girls. It's a textbook situation. You go with us, we dance together, you'll feel better. Right, Mags? I hadn't noticed until right then that Maggie had kind of shrunk back toward the door, one foot actually already out in the hall. When we all turned our attention to her, she flushed.
Well, she said, actually...
Silence. Then Leah said,
actually what?
I kind of have a date.
What? Esther said. What happened to sisterhood?
You guys were totally blowing that off up until this very second, Maggie protested. How was I supposed to know you'd actually come around?
If you tell me you're going with Jake Stock, Leah warned, my head is going to explode.
No.
Maggie flushed again, then looked down at her hands.
Adam asked me.
Leah and Esther looked at each other, then at Maggie, then at each other again.
Holy crap, Esther said, exhaling. Finally.
No shit, Leah said. He finally got up the nerve. Maggie brightened, stepping back into the office.
So, you're not mad?
Of course we are, Leah said. But, Esther added, we're also happy that this sexual tension that's been going on for years...
Years,
Leah agreed. We'll finally be resolved one way or another, Esther finished.
Oh, it's not like that, Maggie said, flipping her hand. We're just going as friends.
No, I said. You're not. She looked at me.
What?
He likes you, I told her. He told me. And I'm telling you because if you blow your chance, you'll be really sorry. Trust me.
Excuse me? I heard someone yell from the sales floor. Is anyone working here?
Whoops, Maggie said, turning around.
I'm on it, Esther told her, brushing past her to the hallway. Leah followed her, tossing her cup in the trash as she went. A moment later, I heard them burst out, already chattering at the customer, as if to compensate for the silence. Maggie leaned against the door jamb, looking in at me as I sat back in the office chair.
I wish you'd reconsider about tonight, she said after a moment. It's still a memory worth having, even if it's not exactly what you imagined.
I know, I told her, but honestly, I just don't think I have it in me.
Well, if you change your mind, we'll be there, okay?
Okay. She nodded, then pushed off the door, heading back to work.
Oh, I meant to tell you, she said. Your bike? It's awesome.
You think?
A Gossy with whiplash cranks, a Tweedle fork, and those fat Russell tires? You can't go wrong.
I sighed. Well, at least I'll be leaving at the end of the summer with something.
I think, she said, that was already the case.
And then she patted the door jamb twice and was gone again. I looked back at my cupcakes, noting that
Somehow, Esther had remembered that they were the one thing I'd bought, on impulse, all those weeks ago. I unwrapped them, pulled one out, and took a bite. It was too rich, the icing sticky. But weirdly enough, it did match the coffee perfectly. Chapter 18.
Are you sure about this? Heidi asked, for about the millionth time as she stood in the open door. Because I can probably still...
Heidi, I shifted Isby to my other hip. Go.
But it just seems so wrong. If anyone should miss this, it's me. It's not like I haven't been to...
Go, I repeated.
Look, if I find someone there who can relieve you, I'll just send them.
I narrowed my eyes, shooting her the best cold bitch look I could muster. She recoiled slightly and stepped out onto the porch.
Okay, fine, she said. I'm going.
I stood there, watching as she started down the steps. After much debate, she'd selected a long coral-colored dress with spaghetti straps. It had looked strange on the hanger, too plain, the color odd. But once on, she was a total knockout. All the more reason not to wear the baby Bjorn over it, which had been her original plan, as she'd never found a babysitter.
I'm fine, I'd assured her hours ago when I volunteered.
I don't want to go to the prom, I told you that.
But it's your one chance,
she sighed, looking at Isby, who was on the bedroom floor, between us, on her little play gym, kicking her feet at the ladybug hanging overhead.
I just hate how all this turned out for you.
I'm really okay, I said. She studied me, doubtful. I said, I am. Weirdly enough, this was kind of true. Even with my morning of double rejections, even though I'd walked my new bike home instead of riding it, as I just was not up for another bruise to my shins, elbows, or ego. Even after I'd taken that violet dress out of my room and laid it across Heidi's bed and slipped on my sweats and a tank top, dressing down just as everyone else began dressing up. In some ways, maybe this was what I'd done back in May, my first time around. But it was also totally different. I realize now why Maggie was so sure I'd be leaving with more than a bike at the end of the summer. Because it was obvious. This true difference in me now. I had these experiences, these tales, more of this life. So maybe it wasn't the fairy tale. But those stories weren't real anyway. Mine were. Once Heidi was gone, I carried Isby out to the deck, holding her up so she could see the water. There were still people out on the beach, soaking up the last of the daylight, while others were already out for their evening walks, proceeding past in couples or groups, dogs and children running out ahead or lagging behind. We watched for a while, then headed back inside, where I heard someone knocking at the door. As I passed the kitchen table, I saw Heidi's phone sitting right next to the salt shaker. She'd missed two calls, whoops, before realizing and doubling back for it. When I pulled the door open, holding the phone out with my other hand, I saw it wasn't Heidi after all. It was my mother.
Hi, Auden, she said. Can I come in?
In response, Isby let out a squawk. My mom looked at the baby, then at me.
Sure, I said, then realized I needed to step back to make room for this to actually happen.
Of course. I retreated. She advanced, and then somehow I was shutting the door behind me and shoving Heidi's phone into my back pocket before following her as she walked slowly through the foyer and toward the kitchen. I wasn't sure what it was about her that was so jarring, especially since she looked just the same. Dark hair piled on her head,
black skirt and tank top, the onyx necklace that hung right at her collarbone, emphasizing its sharpness. But still, something was different. "So," I said slowly, shifting Isby back to my other hip, "what are you doing here?" My mom turned and looked at me. Under the brighter lights of the kitchen, I saw she looked tired, even kind of sad.
"I've been worried about you. Ever since our last conversation, I kept telling myself I was just being silly, but then..."
She trailed off, and I realized how rare this was, her using my dad's old trick. My mom never liked to leave any of her meaning in another person's hands. "But then," I repeated.
"I came anyway," she finished. "Call it a mother's prerogative. I wonder if your dad and Heidi can spare a cup of coffee?"
"Of course," I said, walking over to the cupboard to pull out a mug. I was trying to reach up to get one and manage Isby, who had suddenly decided to go all squirmy on me, when I looked over at my mom, who was watching me with a curious expression.
"Do you think you could..."
"Oh," she said. Then she sat up straighter, as if about to be graded on something, and held out her hands.
"Certainly."
I handed Isby over, feeling my mom's fingers brush mine as she left my hands for hers. Before I turned back to get the coffee, it struck me how strange it was to see my mother with a baby. She looked awkward sitting there, her arms bent at the elbow, studying Isby's face with a clinical expression, as if she was a puzzle or riddle. In turn, Isby stared back at her, googly-eyed, moving her little hands in circles, around and around again. Still, when I slid the coffee in front of her a few moments later, I stood at her side, prepared to take over. But she kept her eyes on the baby, so I sat down instead.
"She's very cute," she said finally.
"Looks a little like you did at this age."
"Really?"
My mom nodded.
"It's the eyes. They're just like your father's."
I looked at Isby, who seemed to be not at all worried about being held by a stranger, much less one who was clearly somewhat uncomfortable. As far as she knew, everyone she met had her best interest at heart.
"I didn't mean to worry you," I said to my mom now. There's just been a lot going on."
"I could tell."
She eased Isby into a seated position, picking up her coffee with her other hand.
"But I still got worried when in that last call you started asking about the divorce. You sounded so different."
"Different how?" I asked. She considered this for a minute. Then she said,
"The word that comes to mind is younger, actually, although for the life of me I can't explain why that is."
It made sense to me, but I didn't say so. Instead, I reached out, taking one of Isby's fat fingers and squeezing it. She looked at me, then back at my mom.
"The truth is, I thought I was losing you," she said, more to Isby than to me. "When you came down here to your father and Heidi and made all these friends, and then with the argument we had about the dorms, I suppose I'd just gotten comfortable thinking we were on the same page. And then suddenly we weren't. It was very strange. Almost lonely."
"Almost," I thought. Out loud, I said, "Just because we don't see eye to eye on everything doesn't mean we can't be close. True, she agreed. But I suppose it was just very jarring for me to see you changing so quickly. It was like you had this whole world of traditions and language I didn't understand, and there wasn't a place in it for me. She was still looking at Izbi as she said this. Face to her face, her hands around the baby's waist. As if these words were meant for her ears alone. I know the feeling, I said.
Do you?
I nodded. Yeah, I do. Now she turned, looking at me.
I could not bear,
she said slowly, making sure each word was clear.
To think that a choice I made in my life had somehow ruined yours. That would be unthinkable for me.
I thought of us that night on the phone. The way her voice had softened suddenly when I'd brought up the divorce. My mother had always had her cold, hard shell. This brittle armor she put up between her and everyone else. But maybe, all along, she'd seen it differently. That I was not outside, banging to get in, but in there with her, protected and safe, giving her all the more reason to stay that way.
You didn't ruin my life, I told her. I just wish we'd talked more.
About the divorce?
About everything.
She nodded, and for a moment we just sat there, both of us watching Izbi, who was studying her feet. Then she said,
That's never been my strong suit, the emotional talking thing.
I know, I agreed. She looked at me. It wasn't mine either, but I kind of got a crash course this summer.
Really? She said.
Yeah. I took in a breath. It's not that hard, actually.
Well, she swallowed. Maybe you can teach me sometime.
I smiled at her. I just reached to put my hand over hers, feeling it warm beneath mine, when I felt Heidi's phone buzz in my back pocket.
Shoot, I said, pulling it out. I better get this.
Go ahead, she replied, sitting back and resettling Izbi on her lap.
We're fine.
I got to my feet, then hit talk without checking the ID. Hello?
Heidi?
The fact that my dad didn't recognize my voice said something, although I wasn't sure I wanted to think about what exactly. I considered just hanging up, taking the coward's way out, but instead I said,
No, it's Auden.
Oh, a pause.
Hi there.
Hi, I said. I looked at my mom, who was watching me, then turned my back, starting into the foyer. It still seemed too close, though, so I headed upstairs. Heidi's not here. She left her phone by accident when she went to the beach bash. It was very quiet on the line. So quiet that I had to wonder why there is interference or static only when you really want to hear what the other person is saying.
Well, he said finally, how are you?
I'm okay, I told him. Busy.
I figured. I've left you some messages.
He cleared his throat.
I'm assuming you're angry at me.
No, I said, going into the bedroom, where my purple dress was still lying across the bed. I picked it up, carrying it to the closet. I've just been working some things out.
And I as well.
He coughed again.
Look, I know you're there with Heidi, hearing her side of things.
Heidi wants you to come home.
That's what I want, too, he said, but it's just not that simple.
I pushed the dresses down the closet rod, the hangers clacking against each other, and stuffed the purple dress back in. Instead of shutting it, though, I kept moving through the line, looking at the other things there. I asked, "Then what is it?"
"What?"
I pulled another black dress out, this one with a pleated skirt, then shoved it back.
"You keep saying that, how it's not simple. So tell me what it is then."
I could feel his surprise, tangible, which I guess shouldn't have been that shocking itself. He was used to me chalking up whatever decisions he made to a peculiar kind of logic, all his own. It excused so much. It excused everything. He was a writer. He was moody. He was selfish. He needed his sleep. He needed his space. He needed his time. If he'd kept himself apart from the rest of the world, these things would have been just quirky annoyances, nothing more. But that was just the thing. He did involve other people. He reached out, drew them close. He made children with them, who then also couldn't separate themselves, whether they were babies or almost adults. You couldn't just pick and choose at will when someone depended on you or loved you. It wasn't like a light switch, easy to shut on or off. If you were in, you were in. Out, you were out. To me, it didn't seem complicated at all. In fact, it was the simplest thing in the world.
"See," my dad said now, "this is what I meant when I said you were angry. You've heard Heidi talking, and you've only gotten one side of the story."
"That's not why I'm upset with you," I told him, pushing more dresses aside. There was something so satisfying in the sound of the hangers clacking, all those colors blurring past, pink, blue, red, orange, yellow, each one like a shell, a skin, a different way to be, even if only for a day.
"Then what is it?" he asked.
"Black, green, black polka dot." "It's just," I said, "you have the opportunity for a second chance here."
"A second chance," he repeated.
"Yeah," I said. Short-sleeved, long-sleeved, narrow skirt, full. "But you won't even take it. You'd rather just quit." He was quiet. The only sound, the hangers, sliding. I was almost to the end now. The choices narrowing to few. Then fewer still.
"Is that what you think?" he said slowly. "That I'm quitting on you?"
"Not on me," I said.
"On who, then?"
And then, suddenly, there it was. A simple black dress with tiny beads hanging from the skirt, matching those along the neckline. A dancing dress. A flapper dress. The perfect dress. The one I'd been looking for all along. And as I stared at it, I found something else as well. The answer to his question, and the reason, I realized suddenly, why this summer had brought so much of this to the surface. "Isby," I told him. When I said her name, I saw her face, squawking, cooing, wailing, drooling, sleeping, wakeful, fussy, content. The first day I'd seen her asleep in Heidi's arms, and how she'd been only seconds ago, her eyes following me as I left the room. All these little parts of her, just the very beginning of who she would and could be. It was early yet. She had everything ahead of her, and more than anything,
I hoped that she wouldn't need a lot of second chances. That maybe, unlike so many of us, she'd find a way to get it right the first time.
Isby? My dad repeated. You mean the baby?
That's what I call her, I told him. That's who she is to me. He was quiet for a moment. Then he said,
Auden, I love Thisby. I'd do anything in the world for her. Or for you. You have to know that.
This was what my mother had said, too, only moments earlier, and I'd chosen to believe her. So why was this so much harder? Because my mom had come to me. Traveled all this way, taken that risk, retraced some, if not all, of her steps to get us back to a place where we could, hopefully, forge a new path together. My dad was still in the same spot, and as always, he wanted me to come to him. Like I'd done at the beginning of the summer, in this house, and at home as well. Always crossing that distance, crossing town, accommodating, making excuses.
If that's true, I said to him, then prove it.
He was quiet for a moment. Then he said, how am I supposed to do that?
Sometimes you get things right the first time, others the second. But the third time, they say, is the charm. Standing there, a quitter myself, I figured I'd never know if I didn't get back on that bike one last time. So, instead of replying, I pulled the black beaded dress from the closet, draping it across the bed.
You figure it out, I told him. There's something I have to do.
I'd planned to drive. In fact, I'd had my keys in hand as I ran out the door, the black dress swishing around my knees. But then I saw the bike, sitting right against the steps where I left it. And the next thing I knew, I was climbing on. I raised up on the pedals, tried to remember everything Maggie had taught me over the last few weeks, and then pushed off before I could change my mind. It was weird, but as I started down the front walk, wobbling slightly, but upright at least so far, all I could think of was my mom. When I'd hung up the phone moments earlier, I'd pulled on the dress and found my flip-flops and bag, figuring I'd put Isby in the stroller and take her with me. But as I started to strap her in, hurriedly explaining myself to my mom, the baby started to fuss, then cry, then scream. Oh, no, I said as her face flooded with color. I knew the signs of a full-out fit when I saw one. This is not good.
She doesn't like the stroller?
Asked my mom, who was standing behind me. Usually she loves it. I don't know what the problem is. I bent down, adjusting the straps, but Isby just yelled louder, now kicking her feet for emphasis. I glanced up at my mom. I better just stay here. She's really unhappy.
Nonsense.
She gestured for me to move aside, then leaned over, undoing the straps and lifting Isby up.
I'll watch her. You go have fun.
I didn't mean for my expression to be so doubtful, or shocked, but apparently it was because she said,
Auden. I raised two children. I can be trusted with a newborn for an hour.
Of course you can, I said quickly. I hate to leave you with her when she's like this.
She's not like anything,
my mom said, pulling the baby closer to her and patting her back. Weirdly enough, before, when Isby had been googly and cheerful, it was clear she was uncomfortable. But now, amid the screaming, she looked completely at ease.
She's just given me a piece of her mind.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I said, raising my voice to be heard above the din.
Absolutely. Go.
She put the baby over her shoulder, still patting.
That's right. That's right, she said over the shrieking. Tell me everything you have to say.
I just stood there, watching, as she started to pace the kitchen floor, rocking Isby in her arms. As she walked, she fell into a rhythm. Step, pat, step, pat. The baby over her shoulder looked at me, her face still red, mouth open. But as the space increased between us, she began to quiet down, and down, and down, until all I could hear was my mother's footsteps. And then something else.
Shh, shh, she was saying. Everything's all right.
Her voice was low, soft, and with these last words, suddenly familiar in a way it hadn't been ever before. That voice I thought I'd imagined or conjured, it was her all along. Not a dream or a mantra, but a memory. A real one. Everything's all right, I thought now, as I bumped over the curb and onto the street. There was no traffic in the neighborhood, and I thought of all those mornings with Maggie, feeling her hand on the back of my seat, her footsteps slapping the pavement as she raced to keep up before giving me one last push. Go! And I was on my own. I just kept riding, shooting under streetlights and past mailboxes, the tires whizzing against the pavement. As I turned out of the neighborhood, I had the road to myself, all the way to the single stoplight where it ended at the beach. It was the light I focused on, solid green, up ahead of me as I pedaled faster, the fastest yet. My hair blowing back, the spokes of the tires humming. I'd never gone so fast before, and it occurred to me that I should probably be scared. But I wasn't. On the other side of the light, I could see the ocean, big and dark and vast. And I pictured myself hitting the sand and just keeping going, over the dunes and into the waves, the current the only thing strong enough to stop me. I was so immersed in this image, which was amazingly clear in my head, that I didn't see two things until I was right up on them. The banged-up Toyota truck sitting at the stoplight, and the curb right across from it. I saw the truck first. Suddenly, it was just there, although I was positive there had been no traffic when I'd looked only seconds earlier. And maybe it was a good thing that I hardly had time to process that it was, in fact, Eli's truck. Because the next second, the curb presented itself, and it needed my full attention. I was already zooming past Eli when I realized I had to make a decision. Try to brake and turn and hope my crash was a small one, or keep going and try to jump the curb. If anyone else had been in that truck, I probably would have taken the first option. But it wasn't anyone else, and I knew, even in those dwindling seconds when I could feel every bit of my blood rushing through my ears, that this was probably the best way to explain to him what I'd tried to that morning at the shop. So, I jumped. It wasn't like what I'd seen Maggie do that night at the park, or the tons of bike videos I'd watched over the last few weeks. But it didn't matter. For me, the feeling of rising up suddenly, suddenly being airborne, the tires spinning into nothing, was amazing. It was like a dream. Or maybe like waking up from one. It only lasted a few seconds, and then I was coming down hard, the bike hitting the pavement with a bang beneath me. Even as it kept moving forward. I felt the shock all the way from my fingertips to my elbows as I tried to control the handlebars, hanging on for dear life as the tires skidded, trying to fall over sideways. This was the point where I'd always given in to the crash,
squeezing my eyes shut as the garbage can or bushes came closer, closer, closer. But now I kept them wide open and just held on. And after a spray of sand, I was somehow back upright and moving on. My hands were shaking as I carefully eased on my brake, feeling my pulse thudding in my temple. It was all so clear to me. The fast approach, spotting the curb, the launching up, up, up. And yet at the same time, I couldn't believe I'd actually done it. In fact, it didn't even seem real until I circled around, still shaking, and saw Eli, who at some point had pulled over to the curb and gotten out of his truck, and was now just standing there, staring at me.
"Holy crap," he said finally. "That was awesome."
"Yeah?"
He nodded. "And here I thought you couldn't ride a bike."
I smiled, then pedaled back toward him. It was only as I got closer that I noticed he was not in his usual jeans and t-shirt or hoodie, but wearing nice black pants, some vintage-looking shiny dress shoes, and a long-sleeved white shirt untucked. "I couldn't," I said, coming to a stop beside him. "Maggie taught me."
"How to jump, too?"
"No," I said, feeling myself flush. "I kinda winged that part, actually."
"Really?"
"You couldn't tell?" He looked at me for a moment.
"Actually," he said, "I could."
What gave me away? The look of pure terror on my face?
"Nope." He leaned back on his heels. "In fact, you didn't look scared at all."
"How did I look?"
"Ready," he replied.
I considered this as I looked down at my bike. "Yeah," I said. "I think I was, actually." Maybe this should have felt strange, especially after all that had happened, but it didn't. Perhaps because it was nighttime, when things that might have felt odd in daylight instead seemed just right. Like riding a bike in a prom dress and crossing paths with only one person, and it's the only person you want to see. If it was light out, I would have questioned more, second-guessed, started to overthink. But now it seemed natural to turn to Eli and say, "You were right, you know."
"About what?"
"Me," I said. "How I always quit if I don't get something right the first time. It's been a big mistake."
"So you believe in second chances now?" he said, clarifying.
"I believe," I said, "in however many you might need to get it right." Eli slid his hands back in his pockets.
"I'm believing in that, too, actually. Especially today."
"Really?" He nodded, then gestured to his truck behind him.
"So, you know how I said no to you earlier, when you asked about the prom?"
I felt my face flush. "I think I remember that, yeah."
"I had this competition in Roardale. I've actually been back competing for a few weeks now."
"I know." He looked surprised, which I had to admit I kind of liked, as it was so rare.
"How?"
"I've been kind of keeping up with the standings," I said. "Online. So, how'd you do?"
"I won."
I smiled. "That's great. So, I guess you're back riding for real now?"
"Nope. I'm done."
"You're quitting again?"
Retiring, he corrected me. As of today.
Why?
He leaned back on his heels, looking down the dark street. I was planning to last year, you know, because I'd gotten into the U and wanted to go to school, but then... I waited. Because with Eli, he was never trying to get you to finish for him. He always knew where he was going, even if it took a little while to get there.
Abe died, he said, and everything just stopped.
But it wasn't how I wanted to go out, just dropping off the map like that.
You wanted to go out on top, I said.
Or at least try to. He reached up, pulling a hand through his hair. So I'm sorry about today. I wish I'd explained better why I said no.
I understand, I told him. It was just something you had to do.
He looked at me, his eyes so dark.
Yeah, he said.
Exactly.
A car was driving up to the light now, its headlights moving across us. They paused, their turn signal ticking, before moving past. Then Eli looked me up and down, taking in my dress and my flip-flops.
So, he said, where are you going?
To the prom, I told him.
You?
Same.
Better late than never, right? He said.
Want a ride? I shook my head. He raised his eyebrows, opening his mouth to respond, but before he could, I reached out, taking his hand, and pulled him closer to me. Then I stood on tiptoes, bringing my lips to his. The kiss was slow and sweet, and while it was happening, I had that image again of us so small, standing in the middle of Colby, under that stoplight, as the entire town and world turned around us. And in that moment, if only for that moment, we were right where we were supposed to be. I smiled at him as I stepped back, then up on my pedals again. He turned slowly in a circle, watching me as I slowly rode around him, once, twice, three times, like casting a spell.
So, you don't want me to take you? He said.
No, I replied. But I'll meet you there. Chapter 19. The coffee in the DeFries cafeteria was good, but not great. It was covered by my meal plan, though, and the cups were bottomless, so I'd learned to like it just fine. I fit a travel lid onto my jumbo cup, then pushed out onto the quad, pulling my backpack over my shoulder with my free hand. Now that it was October, it was getting colder, a chill to the air that made a warm drink that much more necessary. I climbed onto my bike, balancing my cup with one hand as I carefully rode back across the empty campus to my dorm, a light drizzle starting to fall just as I pulled up at the rack outside. By the time I got to my room, I could hear the rain pinging off the windows.
"Hey," Maggie said, peering down at me from the top of our loft as I came in, shaking off my windbreaker. "I thought you'd already taken off."
"Not yet," I told her. "I had a couple of last things to do." She yawned, leaning back on her bed.
"Oh, your phone was ringing," she said. "A couple of times, actually."
I sat down on my bed, putting my coffee down on the milk crate I used as a bedside table. In addition to my alarm clock, it also held a stack of books and the contents of Heidi's latest care package. 2 bath bombs, a lip gloss, and a brand new pair of pink slingback jeans. I hadn't had use for any of them yet, but still, I appreciated the gesture. Also on my table
was my The Best of Times picture frame Hollis had given me all those months ago. I'd forgotten about it until the day I was packing to leave for school, when I realized that I finally had something I could actually put in it. But I couldn't decide if I should use a shot from the prom, or one of the several I'd taken with Maggie, Esther, and Leah in our last days in Colby. Maybe, I thought, I should use the one of me with Hollis and Laura, the day they officially announced their engagement. I had so many choices that in the end, I just chose to leave it empty until I was absolutely sure. Because maybe the best of times were yet to come. You never knew. There was one picture I did like to keep close at hand, but it wasn't of me. Instead, I preferred Isby's face to be the first one I saw when I rolled over in the morning. I'd been surprised by how hard it had been to leave her at the end of the summer. My last day, we'd sat together for over an hour, her asleep on my shoulder as we rocked in the chair in her room. Her warm skin, damp weight, that smell of milk and baby. I could still remember it so easily, as well as all the things I'd whispered in her ear about her and me and this world of girls and boys we were both just one small part of. Someday she'd be able to tell me everything she knew, too. I couldn't wait. In the meantime, I had one other thing to remind me of her. I'd seen it at the local park mart during one of my first trips out after coming to school. And without even thinking, I'd tossed it into my cart. I was lucky to have Maggie as a roommate for an endless number of reasons, but the fact that she could tolerate the sound of waves once in a while, especially fake ones, was at the top of the list. Now, I picked up my phone, scrolling through my missed calls. Sure enough, there were two. One from my mom, who called regularly, presumably to discuss my studies, although we usually got on to other topics pretty quickly these days. Like Laura and Hollis's wedding, which was making her insane, although she was trying to keep an open mind, she swore. Or her slowly growing relationship with Finn, the graduate student with the black-rimmed glasses. He was sweet and funny and adored my mother. How she felt about him was harder to say, although I'd been working with her so that when she was ready to talk about it, she'd be able to. The second message was from my dad. He was back at home with Heidi, giving it another shot. A decision he'd made the night of the prom when he elected not to catch his flight, but come over to watch Isby instead. Something about finding my mother walking the floor, soothing her, struck a chord with him. The very image able to convey all the things that I hadn't been able to. He'd sent my mom back to her hotel and sat with Isby until late that night, when Heidi arrived home. Shoes in hand, all abuzz from the beach bash. While the baby slept, they talked. And talked. He didn't come home right away. It was a slow process, with a lot of negotiations, and things had changed. Heidi was back at the store part-time, and my dad had dropped to teaching only one course, so they could each work but still have time with the baby. The days neither of them could be home, Isby stayed with either Karen, Eli's mom, who always liked a bit of baby time, or one of a few Waymar co-eds who loved the extra perk of free clothes from Clementine's. My dad was still trying to sell his novel, but in the meantime he'd started a new book, one that was about the dark underbelly of parenthood and suburbia. He only had time to write late at night, but despite the less than 9 hours, it seemed to suit him. Plus, he was always up for a chat if I was pulling an all-nighter as well. I slid my phone into my pocket, then picked up my bag and coffee.
I'm out of here, I said to Maggie.
See you tomorrow, she replied.
Oh, wait, I won't actually. I'm going to Colby.
You are?
Yeah, it's the grand reopening, remember?
Oh, I meant to tell you, Adam sent a t-shirt for you. It's over on your bureau.
I couldn't believe I'd forgotten. Especially since whenever Adam had come to visit, at least every other weekend, it was all he could talk about. He'd taken over managing the shop in the fall, juggling it with his part-time class schedule at Weimar, and he was completely excited about how Clyde was letting him make changes, get in new stock, really spruce the place up. New signs, new specials, new everything. There had been one holdover from the previous manager, though, one last thing he needed to do, which I saw when I picked up the shirt, unfolding it. Abe's Bikes, I read off the front. It does have a nice ring to it.
Don't you think? She replied, sticking her head over the edge to look down at me again.
God, but Adam's a nervous wreck. He's freaking out that everything has to be perfect, and of course things keep going wrong. I'm afraid he's going to have a nervous breakdown if anything else screws up.
Nah, I said. But if it does, just tell him I said to get back on the bike.
What?
He'll understand.
I waved at her, then pulled my bag over my shoulder as I made my way down the hallway, then the stairs, to my car. It was just after 5, and the sun was going down. By the time I got off the interstate 2 hours later and pulled into the parking lot of Ray's, it had already been dark for a while. I cut the engine, then sat there for a second, looking in at the bright lights and shiny tables. Ray's was no washroom, but the waitresses were nice, and you could sit as long as you wanted, which was a good thing when it was late and you had no other options, the way I had been when I'd first discovered it. Now I had plenty, but one big reason to be here, just the same. I found him at table 4, our favorite, the one in the corner by the window. Mug in his hand, slice of pie, half-eaten, by his elbow, totally immersed in the textbook in front of him. This semester he was taking an insane number of hours at the U, playing catch-up for the year he'd missed, and it had been tough for him at first, going back to school. Kind of new, definitely scary. But luckily, I knew all about inside things like this, and was more than happy to help him on his quest, one paper and test at a time. I bent down, kissing his forehead, and he looked up at me and smiled. Then I slid in opposite him as the waitress approached, filling the mug beside me. As I picked it up, it was warm in my hands, and I felt his hand move onto my knee. Morning would come before we knew it. It always did. But we still had the night, and for now, we were together. So I just closed my eyes and drank it all in. This is Rachel Botchin. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Along for the Ride by Sarah Dessen. This program was executive produced by Patty Perus and produced by Claudia Howard. Along for the Ride is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Incorporated. Copyright 2009. All rights reserved. The book, Along for the Ride, is available wherever Viking books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.